Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I am your host, Kenny Bedwell, and we are going to be talking about the part two. This is the part two episode on where you should invest, primarily looking at 2025. Now, in the part one episode, if you haven't listened to that one yet on where you should invest, you need to go back there and actually listen to that episode because it's going to help give some context and a good foundation to help you understand where you should invest. Because, I mean, that is the title, right? Where should you invest? Not where should we invest or what are just general good markets? And so in this episode, I'm going to talk about good markets to invest in. But just because they're good markets doesn't mean they're good markets for you. And I talk a lot about that in the part one episode. What makes a good market for you and how you can determine that? Okay, so go back and watch that episode or listen to that episode and then come back to this one. Okay, so you're here, you've listened to part one, now you're ready to know some top markets for 2025 and just where should you invest, what you should be looking into. I am going to go through a list, and I've done these lists before, and I'll do them periodically throughout the year, but I also want to talk generally too about some of the trends I'm seeing and just trends and patterns of like where and what to invest into. Okay. Because the more we can understand those, the better and wiser the investments we're going to make. And it isn't necessarily all about just purely investing into a particular market. It's about investing wisely and getting properties that have specific attributes in those markets. And that's what I want to share with you today. So in the past, I've just kind of read through a list and been like, go here. And this is why I like that market and then moved on. But now I want to spend, I've got some more time that I can spend talking and diving into these markets and the data in these markets to help you know what you should be targeting in these markets. So really, really big episode. A lot of people are going to, I'm going to have a YouTube video of this that's going to come out in a few weeks from now. So if you're listening to the podcast, you're actually getting a sneak peek and hearing it all first. So congrats to you. But even in the YouTube video, it's brief on these markets. And so let's dive into it. Let's talk about the markets. Let's dive into why I like the areas, the regions, what I'm seeing, what's going on, future forecasts for these markets and so on for 2025. Okay, first off, I want to make a couple calls for 2025, meaning like, what am I going to see? What do I expect to happen in 2025 for short-term rentals? Okay, so number one, we are going to start to see a petering off of supply increase, meaning that supply has been increasing at a steady rate of about 10 to 15% year over year. And I think that's going to start to drop down. Now, it'll still be increasing naturally, like demand is naturally always increasing as well, for the most part, depending on the market, but just overall, we're talking macro here. So we're going to see supply maybe drop down to about 5 to 10%. That's kind of where that's the call I'm going to make, that range of an increase year over year. Okay, so supply, and the reason why is I think there's going to be some more regulation that's going to drop down in some of these cities, maybe unregulated vacation rental markets. Not that it's going to be bad regulation, but it'll just cap the amount of people entering in. We're also going to see some of these big popular markets start to get really saturated. Competition's going to heat up, and it's already heated up, and you guys have experienced this. But in some of these really, really competitive markets, I think things are going to get a little tough, especially during this winter. Going to be a meager winter for a lot of folks. And frankly, I think you'll see some people exiting, which we've already seen that last year too, or people kind of getting out of the game. And I think the all-time high of the number of properties for sale will actually continue year over year. So last year, or the 2024, we had an all-time high of the number of short-term rentals since pre-pandemic for sale in the market. I think it's going to get even higher this year. And the reason why is you're going to have people exiting, people wanting to pivot out. And then also you're going to have people who are wanting to cash out and go to other markets and get better deals. And so that, it's just a combination of all those things, good and bad there. But yeah, so you're going to see decrease the amount of, not the amount, total amount of supply, but just the increase of supply rate is going to go down. And you're also going to see
I predict a continual decrease in revenue as well overall for properties. So just, I mean, last year, I think it'll be less than it was last year, the decrease rate. So it was about 15% year over year decrease in overall revenue year over year. I think it'll probably fall to like 10%, which is good. I mean, that means that most people will end up, they will be somewhat better off, but overall the market will still be down, and which will force people out, and there'll be higher inventory. I also predict housing prices in a lot of these vacation markets will continue to decline. Okay. So now it's not everywhere. I understand that, but we will continue to see these prices drop as the supply remains really high. And these markets sit on the, or these properties sit on the markets for higher and higher. What does that mean for you? That actually means that some of these popular vacation rental markets can become more appetizing to invest in when there's blood in the water. We're starting to see this already in some of our early market. So there are certain markets that they're kind of like the first ones to get impacted by overall macro trends. So for example, in California, Joshua Tree is one of those markets. We see that, and the Smokies is another one. So not necessarily dips in demand, but because of so much saturation and then there's just so much going on, it gets impacted first. And so, and usually it's larger markets that get hit first, and it varies. It's not equal across the board and across the United States. It's certain ones, but Joshua Tree is one of our like kind of early predictors or indicators, I should say, not predictors, indicators, the term I'm looking for, where they, what happens there kind of sets a trend and then like a ripple effect. Like we'll see the trend happen there and then it'll start to happen in other places too. And eventually in most large markets. And so, for example, Joshua Tree got hit first with decrease in revenue. And then it got hit first, or one of the first ones, I should say, not the first one, but one of the first ones to get hit with decrease in revenue, oversupply, all these other things got super saturated very quickly. Now, we're starting to see prices decrease enough to where it actually makes sense to consider investing into that market again, which is crazy. Because like 6 months ago, I would not have said that in 1,000 years. But the market has really shifted down. And you're going to see that in a lot of vacation markets, especially as we start to reach equilibrium with the supply and demand, and not necessarily like, oh, like there's a perfect amount of supply for the perfect amount of demand, but there's too much supply, too many options for sale. Therefore, and not everyone's wanting to rent out their properties, or they're renting out their properties, making money. Therefore, the natural amount of supply will meet that equilibrium with the demand as demand continues to rise. And so, and therein lies the opportunity. And housing prices have a big impact on that. And so as they decrease or decline, it becomes more affordable and more attractive to be into that market and have good properties that are going to stand out and do well. So, and I see that happening in a lot of popular markets. And we've already seen that where they were maybe overpriced, like in the Smokies, they're definitely overpriced. They're probably still overpriced right now, especially dealing with all they have to deal with. And they're still building STRs there. But at some point, they'll realize, hey, this isn't that lucrative anymore. And we need to pivot, especially the builders, because you can't just build hundreds and hundreds of the same units and expect the same results. So what we're seeing is that some of these markets are not yet for the Smokies, but Joshua Tree is getting there, where it's actually becoming more affordable and makes sense with the revenue. So it's just going to take some time. And I actually predict that in 2025, we'll see some of those markets get to that point as the supply has stayed high of the number of properties for sale. Okay, now let's talk about where you should invest, because obviously some of these markets I just named probably would not recommend investing there. And I'm going to do a whole episode. I decided to do a whole episode on where you should not invest in 2025, or where you should avoid, not to stir the pot, but to help you guys understand that investing in the right markets really comes down to understanding what the traffic drivers are, and what supply and what demand is doing. And so let's dive into the actual list and talk about the markets now that we've got some, hey, what's going to happen in 2025, what we think is going to happen in 2025, and where we're actually looking to invest. So starting at number 10, just working my way backwards, because love to leave people in suspense. Don't want to start with number one, because that would be anticlimactic. So starting with number 10, I actually have on the list Bradenton, Florida. Bradenton, Sarasota. So keep in mind, like once again, going back to the beginning, we're not investing anywhere in Bradenton. We're not investing anywhere in Sarasota. There are certain parts that we do want to invest in, certain parts we want to stay away from. Okay. I do like investing on the northern side, especially the north western side of Bradenton, not Bradenton Beach, but Bradenton itself, just north, north and northeast, not across like there's like a bay or something, not across there, but just right in that one area. Also, there's IMG Academy, and investing around there is fine too. I know it's kind of like South Bradenton, so like, but that's a good area. So, because that Bradenton's actually growing, it's growing from really three standpoints. So, people, it's near Tampa, Florida. So, you've got people traveling there for its city. There's a city nearby. So, you got travel from that. So, there's business travel. You have family travel, people coming to visit family and friends and whatever. Obviously, I mentioned IMG Academy. So, IMG Academy is a sports school, it's a private school where a lot of athletes who are talented go and play there in high school, and they have a high chance of being in a D1, going to a D1 college, getting a D1 scholarship for, and then, you know, so on. So they get top coaching and experience and all this good stuff. And then there's like a recruiting pipeline to these other schools. So IMG Academy is really, really growing, and they're expanding. And it's an area to keep an eye on. Is around that, like literally around, not like all of Bradenton, but literally around IMG Academy. And then I like the north side of Bradenton because you get more of the vacation market side there because it's on the way to Bradenton Beach, Anna Maria Island, just a lot of cool stuff. It's just nicer too, nicer neighborhoods, also closer to water. And there's some water canals and things like that along in the northern side. So I do like Bradenton personally. The price points where it really starts to make sense is if you can get a 4 or 5 bedroom. I think that really justifies going there. 3 bedrooms are very competitive. It's also an easy entry point for a lot of folks. $450, $500 for a 3 bedroom. It's not necessarily bad. It's just a lot more competitive. So you have to be willing to invest in the property. I don't actually think Bradenton's going to make the top market list for the following year. Okay. It's pretty competitive. It barely made the list this year. It was one of those like, hey, you know, there's a lot of beach markets, vacation markets, which one's the best out of that list? And it's just kind of Bradenton. So, but it's at number 10. And I highly doubt it's going to make the list next year because of the amount of competition. And it's just going to continue to increase in that market. I do like it today. If you invest today, does it make it a bad investment tomorrow? No, not if you do all the things I tell you to do about how to cash flow positive, build your moat, do all these great things. But the reality is you have to invest in the property. And I talk about this a lot. You have to invest in the property. I think we've gotten that. But like in Bradenton, you really have to do that with added things like amenities. And when I say amenities, I mean pickleball courts and hot tubs and little mini putt-putt and game rooms and all kinds of really cool stuff. It needs to be nice because that market's getting more and more competitive. But still a great market to invest in, still good numbers, still good positivity, wasn't destroyed by the hurricanes or anything like that. So I still really like Bradenton, Florida at number 10. Okay, at number 9, let's talk about the Texas Hill Country. So I actually have Dripping Springs, which is closer to Austin. The Texas Hill Country, it's actually a decent sized area. There's Wimberley, there's Fredericksburg, there's New Braunfels, there's Canyon Lake, there's Dripping Springs. Basically, it's the area between San Antonio and Austin, Texas. Now, the Texas Hill Country has really benefited from the increase in growth of these areas of San Antonio and Austin. The rapidly growing, people are moving there, big growing cities. So the Hill Country has, which is really fascinating, we've seen kind of this year over year, like consistent revenue growth. It's very minimal. It's like 2 or 3%. So it's nothing to like, you know, oh, wow, it's like crazy growing. It's not. But compared to the amount of supply that's entered into the market, okay, because the supply is also increasing at the same time too. And demand is outpacing supply because of the growth of these cities. So they're still growing. So what does that say that's going to happen next year and probably the year after and so on? The Hill Country is going to continue to grow and expand and still be a good market to invest in. And so it's still a good area. However, it can be incredibly competitive also, but the biggest limiting factor about investing into the Hill Country is inventory and also price, purchase price. I mean, those two things are challenging. So it's not for people who have low budgets. Okay. And we talked about budget in the last call or a last episode, and that's why I wanted you to listen to it. So you haven't listened to it. This is your second reminder to go listen to it, but you have. I talked about budgets, and this market doesn't make sense if you can't buy something at $800,000 or more. And I know that's probably controversial, especially I know someone listening to that is investing in the Hill Country. Oh, well, I bought it $600. It's like, hey, when did you buy? What did you buy? Where did you buy? And I guarantee you, we nail down each one of those three things. It doesn't make sense today to replicate that same thing that you did. Okay. So keep in mind too, when I'm speaking about investing in these markets, I'm kind of speaking to a general mass, especially towards a newer investor. So it might not make sense for a newer investor at a lower purchase price due to the competition and who is coming to the market. That's a really important thing about the Texas Hill Country. Who is actually coming to the market? You really have two guests, main guest avatars of who comes to this market. Avatar number one, couples. Okay. So that's like one bedrooms. Avatar number two, large groups for either winery tours or weddings. That's it. Okay. Now, okay. Sure. That's not 100% it, but when we're talking about the grand scheme of things, the majority of people who are coming to this market and why are they coming to the market? Those are the two biggest guest avatars. So what that means is you're really looking for either one bedroom, or you could do like multiple one bedrooms. Those do really well in that area too, like the little tiny homes, or you're looking for five bedrooms or more. That's it. Okay. Nothing in between. So five bedrooms can cost as much as $800,000 and higher, and much higher, really, frankly, in the millions. So being smart and understanding, but the revenue potential is incredibly high. There are properties in the Texas Hill Country grossing over $400,000. So the revenue is there. The opportunity is there. You just have to know how to find it and what to look for. Finding properties with views, finding properties that are on the water, finding properties that have land and space, seclusion and privacy, all those things I talk about in these episodes, that's what you're looking for in the Texas Hill Country. I still really like it. It's not the easiest market to find deals in, but you can still find opportunities there, and people are very successful there. And it's still a very good market and one of the top 10, obviously. So definitely check out the Texas Hill Country. Okay, coming in at number eight. This one, I'm probably not going to spend too much time talking about. And the reason why is because I don't know many people who want to invest here. But for those of you who are like, I'll check it out, you should. Fairbanks, Alaska. So Fairbanks, Alaska is known for, it's got some state parks there. But the really cool thing about Fairbanks is the way that the town is built out is actually more for a wintertime market, which is rare for Alaska. So Alaska is typically people travel there on cruises and everything, especially during the summer. And that's their peak season. So if you look at Alaska travel and occupancy and just revenue in the Alaska markets, you definitely see a peak in the summertime for like 4 months and then it just drops off. And so Fairbanks, however, it still peaks in the summertime, but you have more of a wintertime season, meaning that it's more of a year-round market for travel. Maybe not, you know, as 100% as, you know, some of these other markets, like ski markets, for example. But you saw people coming for dog sledding and ice fishing and seeing the Northern Lights. It's one of the best areas to see the Northern Lights, apparently, in the United States, like consistently. Also, you have other like activities and state parks near there for wintertime snowmobiling, things like that. So like a lot of people come up to do those things. It's a really cool area, kind of small compared to like Anchorage, Alaska, which isn't that big either, but that's the biggest city in Alaska. So definitely a really interesting place to check out. Very, very, very affordable. We're talking like $200,000 homes. So $200,000 homes that can gross 50K. So that's really awesome if you're up for the challenge of investing into Alaska. So definitely check out Fairbanks if that's on your radar, and it's one of the more affordable markets and good markets to invest in. It technically should be higher on the list if we're just going off pure data, but a lot of this too, like I made the list and I'm biased in the sense of like, where do I think people will actually go and want to go that makes sense for them and their investment strategies? And although Fairbanks has good numbers, it doesn't mean everyone wants to go invest in Alaska. So it's lower on my list, but still a good market to check out. It's number eight, right? Okay, so let's move to number seven. And at number seven, we had Bradenton. We had Dripping Springs, and then we had down to Fairbanks. Okay, and then now we're going to South Haven, Michigan. So at South Haven, it's a great market. I really like Michigan, a lot of parts of Michigan as markets. However, the problem I've been dealing with Michigan recently are the stupid property tax reassessments. And so what we're seeing is although some of the numbers are really, really good, the property taxes are not. I'll give you a story. We had a client get something under contract for like $600,000 or $675,000 or something like that. I think it was $600,000. Okay, it wasn't that high. And the property taxes were already like $7,000, which is pretty high for a $600,000 home, but okay. So we called the county to verify, and the reassessment was actually going to be $22,000 for the $600,000 home. So they weren't buying it for $1 million, they were buying it for $600,000. So they got under contract for $600,000, and the taxes were already $7,000, and they were going to go up to $22,000. So this property, they were thinking it was going to gross like $110,000. But you take 22,000 and subtract, so 110 minus 22, and boom, you're left with 80. And it's like, at the end of the day, you're not going to cash flow on that thing, even though like the numbers were pretty decent. So kind of frustrating. And we're seeing that around the board in a lot of places in Michigan where taxes are really eating $10,000 to $15,000 in cash flow because of some of the new regulations and stuff that cities have put in place, not for short-term rentals, but just in general, raising their taxes. So it could be the city, the county, whatever it is. So now, does that mean you should avoid investing in Michigan? No, because that's not the case for every single municipality, village, and town. But that's the hang up for a lot of folks is they're like, okay, well, which villages, which towns, which areas? And so it does vary. And there's some small ones, there's some big ones where it's like, I don't have a list. Short answer is I don't have a list. And that's what you have to figure out yourself. But therein lies the opportunity. That's the work that the 90% isn't going to do. So if you can figure that out and you look and you understand the regulations too vary. So it's you kind of have some hoops to jump through. But if you're able to jump through those hoops, there's tremendous opportunity in that area, especially the western, so like southwestern coast of Michigan. So which is about a 2 to 3 hour drive from Chicago. And the people in that area call it Chicago money. So they drive up, they want to be on the lake and they enjoy the summertime area. So I really, really like that part of Michigan in terms of investability, what you can find there. Love properties with pools, love larger properties. You can do smaller properties. It honestly doesn't really matter, but you either want to be on water or you want to have a pool. Okay. So those are the two areas two attributes I really like in those areas. There's a lot of people who are successful and doing very well in those areas. Just got to find the right property, right price, regulation, taxes, etc. Make sure you understand and run those numbers before you get into any deal in Michigan, but lots of potential there. Love that market. Okay, let's keep moving. So the next one I really like are the Finger Lakes in New York. But the Finger Lakes are really good because you have multiple lakes and you have just a lot of travel and activity going on during the summertime. A lot of big activities, and they benefit from being near a lot of major cities, believe it or not. So the Finger Lakes are directly outside of Rochester and Buffalo, New York, and Syracuse. Okay, so you get immediately those three cities. That's several million people out the gate. But the majority of the travel comes from New York City, which is only about 3 hours away, three, maybe 4 hours away. Like drive. So a lot of people travel in from all over the state, you know, even New Jersey and PA and stuff. A lot of my guests come from Pennsylvania too. And so you've got big travel there from all these different states. So there's actually a lot of different group sizes and individuals coming to this region, but there aren't a lot of hotels. And it's very sprawled out area. The Finger Lakes are actually incredibly long. So Seneca Lake, which is the longest lake, is about 30 something miles, I think, or 51 miles. I probably should have looked that up before I got on here, but it's pretty long. When I drive to my property in Watkins Glen, the route takes me from the top of Seneca Lake and drive straight down. And it takes 45 minutes to get from the top side to the bottom. And it's just a highway. Like you're going 55 and it's 45 minutes. So you do the math. So it's probably about 30 something miles. But anyway, there's Seneca, there's Cayuga, there's and they're all, I think there's like five or six or something like that. And all of them, most of them have wineries on them too. So there's wineries. Watkins Glen has a NASCAR stadium. There's just hiking and state parks. And there's a lot of stuff to do in the summertime. I really do like the Finger Lakes. When we look at the data for the Finger Lakes, one of the things that I found that was really positive to see is that it had a net growth of 20% year over year. Okay, this market actually had the most growth out of all the markets on the entire list. But the reason why it's so, I guess, lower on the list is because of the regulation. So you can't STR everywhere. And that's really important to understand when you're trying to invest in some of these places is, okay, what's my barrier of entry to get in? there's pros and cons. I love it because the competition cannot enter into my markets. Like, you can't get into Watkins Glen where I invest, but you can go into the places nearby. It's not like you can't do that. But then you got to find a property that makes sense. And so, and that's kind of like the combo, the dual combo of like, okay, cool, we can go into these markets, but, or like we can check out these markets, but is there anything actually for sale that makes sense? So regulation and inventory are the two biggest restrictions, even though the revenue numbers are incredible. 20% year over year. That's huge. That's like the overall revenue increase. The average revenue increase is 20% year over year. That I don't, there's the number one market was 15%. So keep that in mind. Like, this is actually the highest revenue increase for markets that I've seen across the entire country, 20% year over year. That's awesome. So I really like the Finger Lakes. I just hate the regulation here from a new investor, a buyer standpoint, trying to get into that market. As someone who's already in it, I love it. Stay out. But for those of you who are looking to invest in the market, those are your hurdles. Understand the different towns and villages. Similar like I mentioned about Michigan, but this is more so for the regulation side. Taxes aren't that bad, believe it or not. They're not great, but they're not bad compared to what you would think for New York. And it's also in New York too. So a lot of people don't like investing in blue states. Okay, so next market I really like is the Bourbon Trail of Kentucky. So the Bourbon Trail, you know, I've talked about this market before. It's made top list before, and I do like it. It's starting to heat up with competition. There are over 46 different distilleries and over 3 million people travel through the Bourbon Trail every year. So it's becoming more of a year-round market. We are seeing growth, but in some of the towns, it is getting competitive. When I see some of the towns, so there's like a good rectangle of towns I like. It's probably not a perfect rectangle, but it starts at the top in the Northeast with Shelbyville, which is near Louisville. Then you drive over to Frankfort. Then you drive down to Lawrenceburg. And then you drive over to Bardstown. Okay, there's distilleries in these areas, okay? And some of the most popular ones are in these different areas. Now, there are distilleries in Louisville, there's distilleries in Lexington, and there's even some in Cincinnati, which you should check out that market too as an urban market. But I'm not encouraging you to go invest in those markets, especially due to regulation. Stay out of Louisville, stay out of Lexington, okay? When you get into these smaller towns, you're dealing with counties. The regulation's actually fine in these counties. And all of our clients who've actually bought there, all of my clients have never had a problem getting a permit, but you do have to jump through some hoops, like show up to a hearing, get approved, show your occupancy, all these other things, which really, if you're thinking about it, you're starting a business, like that really shouldn't be a problem, right? Like getting legal and like showing like, this is how many people we're going to host at our home and this is what we're going to do. But they don't have any issues once they do that. So that newer property we just got in Kentucky, they were like, it was so big. They were like, however many you want to host is fine. We're like, what? We thought we had to go in with, we're like 26. You know, it's a 9-bedroom, 7-bath, 10,000 square feet house. We thought we could go in and just say, oh yeah, 26 people. But they were like, yeah, you're fine. So that one got easily approved. But so the regulation really isn't the problem in Louisville. It's finding the right type of, Bourbon Trail. It's finding the right type of property that's going to stand out. There's a lot of people starting to enter into the market, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just means it's going to get more competitive. And these people are really putting in nice properties and they're making their properties look nice. And so what I love there, there's two types of properties I love there. Number one, wood-sided cabins. They do really well there. Okay. Number two, properties with swimming pools. There you go. Now, let me put a general... You need to have this. You should have this for any property you look at. I would say some people don't have it that I know, and it's okay. It's okay that they don't have this one thing for their property. They're still going to be fine. They're still in good areas, and it's all about kind of purchase price. But if I have a higher purchase price, number one, I'm not going to go over $1 million. All right. Maybe 1.1, one, you know, like that area, that's fine, that little buffer, but that's really it. Don't you dare touch 1.3 up to 1.5. That's stupid. Okay. No house is worth that. There is pretty much what I'm saying. Number two, the reason I love this market is because it can be extremely affordable or expensive. So you can find stuff that's like $300,000 or $400,000, and you can find stuff that's like $800,000, $900,000, $1 million, like I said, or 1.1. That's going to do well. But you have to have land and seclusion. Okay. Now, when I say seclusion, like, does it need to be 100% private? You don't see any neighbors at all? No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying like some space, right? You need to have some space. Areas that people can gather. And so those are the top. Now, I know there's people listening to this who have a property in like downtown Shelbyville or whatever. And, oh, am I going to? No, you're not, because you bought it at a good purchase price. Okay. But I'm talking about people entering, wanting to enter into the market and what you should be looking at today and for 2025. What should you be targeting then? So that's one of the big key things that you should be looking at is land, that seclusion, the space, the privacy, that's really important. And then the type of property. And then I love properties with pools. And yes, you can put in a pool, but if it already comes with one, that's a double bonus. So just food for thought. And being proximity to the towns is also a value, not necessarily necessary. Okay. So meaning like we have know some people who have properties kind of in the middle of nowhere, and they're doing incredibly well because of the type of property, the amenities and what they offer is just unique to the competition. So we really like the Kentucky Bourbon Trail coming in at, I think we're at Atlantic number 4. So I don't know, I'm just kind of going down this list here, and unfortunately they don't have numbers. Okay, let's go in on to the next one. So we have the next, I think it's, yeah, Bourbon Trail is number 4. Number 3 is Shenandoah, Virginia. So I really like Shenandoah. I've mentioned this one before. I don't know. I think you guys have heard of it several times. It's been on the top list. The reason why it keeps staying up pretty high and like swarms of people don't go there is because it's actually kind of difficult to find stuff, just inventory that's really good. Now, does it mean it's possible? No. I say I'd see stuff there like once or twice a month. But, you know, obviously I have some pretty crazy resources and local boots on the ground and sending me deals and things that stand out. And so I have more eyes looking. But for a lot of people I know who look there, they struggle to find stuff. But there are things that make sense. We do see it. And I do like the numbers. The data is the data. Let's see. Interesting fact about in the data. So, yep, occupancy. So we are seeing an increase in occupancy. So Shenandoah is right outside of Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, about 2 hours drive. So we got Shenandoah National Park. I think it's like 2 million people go through there. There's wedding day. It's actually one of the top wedding destination areas for like wedding venues and things in the United States, which makes sense because it's outside 2 major cities, but just fun fact too. There's wineries, I feel like there's wineries everywhere now. All these destinations have wineries. And there's a big river that people can go do stuff. There's actually skiing in Massanutten and on the further on the south end of the valley. So like there's a lot of activities and things going on throughout the year. And we've actually seen an increase in occupancy by 5% during the winter months, year over year, which is impressive. So normally winter months kind of died down. Recently, most areas, winter months have really died down. But in the Shenandoah area, summertime's your high season, but the wintertime has also increased a little bit too. So that's a positive sign. Therefore, we've seen higher revenues in these numbers. I really like the Shenandoah area. Be careful of the regulation in the Front Royal region. So Front Royal's on the north end, and that county, it's a county, it's not Front Royal, passed the law. So it's Front Royal and Bentonville are kind of the two towns there. And they passed a law that says it takes 180 days to get a permit approved for a short-term rental. So that means you can't make a property contingent upon it getting approval of a permit, which makes it risky to be in that area. So I would actually advise not investing in that part, but looking closer to Luray, Shenandoah, and Massanutten. So hopefully I said that right. All right. And then Mickeysville is another one too in that area near Massanutten. So check out those areas. Love that. Now coming in at number 2, I really like this market and it happens to be near Shenandoah as well, which what's interesting enough is what you'll find is that some of these areas, these regions, I should say, are the nearby areas benefit from that region doing well. So it's not just like, oh, this market and that's it. It's kind of like the region is overall doing well. And one of the markets that's near the Shenandoah region or Shenandoah market is Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. So Berkeley Springs is near like a couple ski resorts, some state parks. It's more like a summertime market. But the prices of homes there are really, really cheap. So for example, I saw a 5-bedroom there. It was a really nice cabin in a resort type community where they had like community amenities, similar to what you'd expect in the Poconos. Like they had a pool and I think they had an indoor pool. Or outdoor pool, tennis courts, things like that. And it's a vacation resort, meaning like they're people's second homes. And this was a 5-bedroom cabin for $500, and I think it was listed for $525, which is incredibly affordable. Okay. Especially when it's going to gross like 100K or more. And then you get to benefit from this community. And this cabin was private, had land around it. It had trees around it. So you couldn't see the neighbors. It was a really cool. And it was updated on the interior. It was actually a pretty nice cabin overall. Now, is it like a cabin from the Smokies? No, it's not like brand new and modern, but it was a nice cabin, something that like, yeah, this could make a great vacation rental and could do really well if you added the right design decor in professional photos. And that's the second reason why I like Berkeley Springs, is that the competition there is so low. It's just easy to compete and enter into the market. I love those types of markets where everybody there is like just discovering dynamic pricing, or everyone there is not using dynamic pricing, or they don't have the amenities. They don't have the hot tubs. They don't have the basic things like game rooms or arcades or things like that, where that's become a necessity in most of these big popular vacation destinations. And so I love markets like that because you can get in very easily and compete. And then you also don't have to waste a lot of time trying to market your property and stay ahead of the competition. In these big popular vacation markets, it's really important to have direct booking sites, to consider running Facebook ads, a social media presence, all these other things. But I'll be honest with you, like, I hate that crap. I hate having to do that crap. Therefore, like, what's the path of least resistance for me? Go to a market where I don't have to do that, where I can easily be top dog and not have to compete against all of that stuff and worry about it. Like, if you're the top dog on Airbnb, you don't have to worry about trying to get direct bookings and stuff because you're going to be booked all the time. That's the dream, right? But the problem is you have to choose to go to these markets, right? The Berkeley Springs, you don't know anything about Berkeley Springs. So how do you overcome that difference in what you understand? And the strategy is to just research and understand and learn more about the market. Consider visiting some of these places. Another good market too, that's not on the list here, but it's kind of in the region, is Davis, West Virginia. Really like Davis or near Beckley, West Virginia, New River Gorge. I've talked about these markets before. I know people there who are doing incredible numbers from an ROI standpoint. They're very affordable purchase price. Now, if you have $1 million, don't go to these markets. It doesn't make sense unless you're going to buy two properties. But from an ROI standpoint, it's incredible. And these people are doing awesome. And it's because they've gone there. The competition's low. There's high demand, low supply. And so that's why I really like these markets, but Berkeley Springs number wise makes a lot of sense. Okay. So the final market that I really like is Geneva, Ohio. Geneva, Ohio is located on the northern side of Ohio. It's right outside of Cleveland and it's about 2.5 hours from Buffalo, New York, also a few hours from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania as well. So you've got a couple, you know, Rust Belt cities that are within driving distance. It's a smaller market. Okay. So this isn't a region. This is more of a market. And Geneva, Ohio has some wineries and has some things that go on, some festivals, things like that in the summertime, big summertime market. But because it's on water, it's on the lake, Lake Erie, people do travel there in the wintertime to get away or enjoy whatever water views, even though it's cold as hell. But there's low competition. I think according to my list here, what do I have? Like less than 200 active short-term rentals. We saw wintertime occupancy increase 10% year over year, and revenue has also increased by 15% in Geneva, Ohio year over year as well, which is incredible. And they don't have stupid regulations like the Finger Lakes do. So that's why this market made number one. So it's actually the top market. I think it's literally, if you go to SCR Insights and you go to the market browser tab, it's literally the number one market in there, Geneva, Ohio. And the data speaks for itself, but then also the numbers, not just the numbers, sorry, but the just literally the market, like the things to do in the market, the properties, the competition, all these things we've talked about, all the attributes that we talked about with all these other markets, they all kind of like come together and make this like perfect trifecta of Geneva, Ohio. And so that is why Geneva, Ohio is the number one market to consider investing in. Now, if you have $1 million, going back to the budget conversation, not the market to invest in unless you're going to buy two, maybe even three properties. It's that affordable. So very affordable market, very good ROI, low competition, awesome opportunities. The only thing that would hold you back from finding something in Geneva, Ohio is just inventory, okay, which seems to be a problem in a lot of markets, but especially the good ones. But if you're patient, you're not, one, you got to be patient. Number two, you need to research the crap out of that market, meaning understand where. Okay. Then it's about setting alerts and waiting for the right opportunity to come up. Get it? Go ahead and get an agent in that market and go ahead and understand the neighborhoods in that market and where you want to be and where you don't want to be. And then something will pop up during the year and it should be an incredible opportunity. So I do like Geneva, Ohio as the number one market because of all those different factors and just the revenue growth. It's going to continue to expand and explode. 15% for average revenue growth year over year is a big deal, guys. That's a lot for the average. Okay, keep in mind, the average in these markets still look like grandma's closet or grandma's house, you know, all the clutter and things like that. So the fact that that's increasing 15% year over year, where in most markets down 15% year over year, and they don't look like grandma's house, that is really important. And so that's why I really like the potential and why we might see Geneva, Ohio stay on the list for at least maybe next year or the year after. We'll see. So I hope you enjoyed this. I hope this gave you some direction and some knowledge and insights into new markets to consider on where you should invest. And let's review next year what my predictions, if they actually happen, or if I'm way off base and I should just stop now. Anyway, my name is Kenny Bedwell. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Cashflow Positive. And if you did enjoy it, go to the YouTube channel and like and subscribe to it. So it's Cashflow Positive. There's a YouTube channel. And also, I did some slides on it too from the first part one of this past week. So check out that episode on the YouTube and the video. And anyway, I hope you enjoyed this one. And I will see you on the next episode of Cashflow Positive.